Welcome to the Black Sparrow Media Internet Broadcast Network.
Everybody, and welcome to episode number 110 of Linux in the Ham Shack. I think my mic's actually a little bit hot tonight. Yeah, that's better. Anyway, this is Russ, K5TUX, welcoming you all to this great American podcast we call Linux in the Ham Shack. And now it's bicultural, bicameral, bicountry, I don't know, something like that. But now we're full of Canadianism too. So how's things going with you, Pete? Oh, and by the way, it's VE2XBL. I won't make that mistake again this week.
Yeah, that's all right. Good evening, everyone. Happy to be back. Yes, we are an international podcast. Yeah, I like to say international because potentially there could be more than just two countries and it makes us sound cooler.
Yes, we are now multicultural, multilingual, and something that I can't think of right off the top of my head.
But always have been cool.
And this week, the show is really going to feature Pete. This is going to be your moment to shine because my head is really in a different place tonight. I'm not even sure if I could tell you where it was. And since you, as usual, have done a lot of work in putting down some notes and stuff about things to talk to, I'm sure I can chime in here and there. But most of the stuff, I'm not even sure what it is.
Oh, yeah, you do. I'm sure you'll figure it out. It's not that complicated. If I can figure it out, you can.
Okay.
Not a problem. I didn't work that hard. I just did a little bit of reading this week. That's all.
And as you can tell, my brain is really gone tonight. This is going to be sort of a Wild West episode where we're going to let the cows out, try and round them up with a skateboard because things are going to be bad, but we'll do the best we can. Or at least I will. Pete will be the model of the podcaster. So
the model podcaster,
the model, yes, the very model of a modern major general podcaster,
whatever,
which we'll learned was from Pirates of Penzance. Anyway, we should probably get into it. So what's this thing about Izzy?
Izzy is my daughter. Izzy graduated this week. Izzy graduated grade 6, and I'm very proud of Isabel. Isabel does not listen to the podcast, but I figured I'd mention it on here in the off chance that I meet an untimely death, and she gathers all of the audio recordings to fondly remember my voice, and then she'll hear, oh, he mentioned me. So there you go. Happy graduation, Iz. That's my 30 seconds of family recognition there.
Did you happen to say where she graduated from? Not the place, but the level. I must have missed that.
Grade 6.
Grade 6.
Graduation. So graduating from elementary school, going into middle school. So now, when I graduated many, many moons ago, there were no graduations for grade 6. They just kicked us out of school. Happy to see us go. And off we'd go to be the new fish in the pond that is high school. But now they send them off with a cute little graduation ceremony, pictures, grad dance, chaperone, and the whole bit. It's very cute. The kids like it. So, it's, you know, it doesn't have all the fanfare that a high school graduation does, nor should it, because you don't want to take away from that event. But I think it's kind of neat that they recognize the kids. They've worked hard. You know, they're the big kids leaving school. So it's sort of fitting, I guess.
Well, hopefully they learn something along the way.
Yeah, we'll find out. Do they do that where you're from? Do you know that the high school or the grade school kids, do they have a graduation for grade school kids?
Yeah. I understand they do now. Back in my day, they, you know, didn't have that kind of thing. But I do believe they do that for middle schoolers these days.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if it was just a Canadian thing or if it was truly international.
No, I think it's all children must be led to feel that they are successful at all stages these days.
Yes, all children are special, which makes them all normal.
Okay.
Well, if they're all special, they're all the same, which makes them normal.
Which makes them not special at all.
There you go. And like I said, luckily, my daughter doesn't listen to this.
Well, she might someday.
Yeah, one day. Well, I can only hope. I'm working on them. I can't. My younger daughter is interested in the whole radio thing and, you know, playing with wires and pushing knobs and buttons. The oldest one, very much a little girl. The younger one's more the tomboy, kind of going to be the base jumper, you know, intense athlete, extreme sports, whereas the other one is kind of more introverted, intellectual, likes to read a lot. So two opposite ends of the spectrum. Very interesting.
Yeah, it is very interesting. And it looks like you may have had a more interesting field day than I did, because you apparently did something where I did nothing at all.
Well, we did, and that's okay. And you could tell us about your relaxing weekend. See, field day is about doing what you want. We had our club had a field day. I was one of three organizers for our club's field day, as I have been for the past couple of years. Traditional field days held outdoors. We were running a one alpha station. Our club's a call sign, by the way, Victor Echo 2 Charlie Lima Mike, in case you heard us, V2CLM. And we were one alpha. Quebec was our exchange, being in the province of Quebec, Canada, of course. That was a very, very big to do this year. It was actually our biggest field day yet. We set up in a field next to the St. Lawrence Seaway, which is a big body of water. Nice, huge park. Lots of open spaces. It's got a bike path running through it. Lots of soccer fields. So there's lots of public around to see what we're doing. We actually had 37 people come this year, which is unheard of. Last year we had 25. The year before we had just over a dozen. So growing in leaps and bounds. 14 people were actual participants, not just visitors. We had visitors who were club members, non-club members. We had people from the general public. We did 396 QSOs for about 792 points, and we are claiming 770 bonus points for various things like emergency power, setting up a public booth for information, inviting local dignitaries, and things like that. And one of my personal highlights was actually a meeting Harrison, who's in the chat room, V2HKW, who's our official show notes doer. And we got to meet in person for the very first time. We've chatted a lot in the radio and Skype and other media, but had never met. And Harrison, I actually thought you were a whole lot taller than you are. Not that he's a little guy, but I kind of figured he was like, you know, 6'6" or something. On Skype, he looks just huge. I guess that's the effect of the camera. But he's about my size, 5'7", 5'8", 5'9", I guess. A great guy. He operated our station for about an hour, a little bit more, because he's a youth operator. That gave us 20 bonus points. But we're happy to have Harrison take part in our field day. He lives down the road about 100 kilometers or 60 miles down the highway from where I am. So he was in town. There you go. He confirms that he's 5'9", Harrison. Sorry, I didn't mean to insult you. He is taking his driver's ed driving course in Brossard, which is the town where our club is living, I guess, and where we had our field day. So Harrison was nice enough to swing by. I met Harrison and I met his mom. We fed them. We let him operate our equipment. We taught Mrs. Harrison's mom about ham radio and what we do. So she seemed very, very interested. So that was very cool. And I know that Harrison also went off the following day and did his own field day. Not his own, but his club in Hemingford was having a field day. So Harrison took part in two field days this weekend. So, we had, barbecue, free barbecue for anybody who showed up. Nothing elaborate, just hot dogs, chips, pop, things of that nature. So very appreciated by everybody who visited, and a great success for us. So we're more than happy to have that kind of growth year after year. So that's it in a nutshell. Questions, comments?
No, everybody had a wonderful field day, it sounded like. Did you happen to contact my old club, Kilo One Fox Sierra?
I did not, but I had the I had it in my notes just in case I heard them. Most of my operation, I operate in the middle of the night because I'm one of the main operators, organizers. I kind of like to kind of sit back and let the people who come in, the visitors and stuff, do their thing and operate. We have a couple of hotshot CW operators too, so let them do their thing. And in the middle of the night, it's just me and one of the other organizers and my dogs. I always go get my dogs at nighttime. It's a little bit added protection. Not that it's not a shady park by any means, but it's kind of good to let them run around and chase squirrels and stuff like that. It gives them some exercise. And so because there's only two of us and the other guy doesn't really like to operate too much, I kind of had the whole station to myself from about midnight till 6 a.m., which is great. So I sleep a little bit, you know, before that. I brought my RV down, so I had the RV on site, which was set up. If you guys go to our website, if you go to www.victorecho2charliemike.charliealpha.v2clm.ca, you'll see some of the photos have been posted under, if you look on the left-hand side, it says album photo, which is French for photo album. And you can see some of the pictures there. So I have my RV set up. We have a tent. And then we have our communications trailer, which has our station in it. So my RV was, we called it the Putin stand, but it was where we'd set up the awning and set up the barbecue. So, you know, we have a little kitchen in there. So it's easy to fridge and stuff, store the hot dogs, keep everything nice and safe because don't want to contaminate food and make our members sick. That would be a bad thing. So, yeah, so I get to sleep, you know, kind of while people are operating, and then I get up and operate when no one's operating, and I have the whole thing to myself. So, yeah, a lot of fun.
Have you seen that thing that's circulating on Facebook that shows the Canadian flag and it says, "Make Putin, not war"?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, that's great.
I think
great.
It was your better half, actually, who sent me that.
Yeah, probably. It was sent to us by some of our friends, and they happen to be lovers of the greasy, gravy, cheesy French fries, which I am as well. So I thought you might get a kick out of that.
Yeah, you have to come up here and get one, unless you can get the squeaky cheese, the actual curd cheese that they, you know, it's traditional in Quebec. It actually squeaks. If you have it fresh, it actually squeaks when you chew on it.
There's actually there's a cheese store here not far away in a town called Osceola where you can get that sort of thing. Cheese curds are not hard to come by in this area, and we like them a lot.
Yeah, good. Yeah, poutine's good. I mean, it's like Russ said, it's French fries, curd cheese, and sauce. It's basically grease on top of grease with grease on top. It's just, you know, it's a heart attack fest. And that's why it's so good. I mean, you can't, you know, it's amazing. It sounds disgusting. The first time I heard about it, I also thought it sounded disgusting. For those of you who may not be familiar, although it's kind of spreading around the world now, you see them all over the place. But no, it's really, really yummy indeed. But I know no poutine for us, so we kept it clean. You know, barbecued foods.
Oh, barbecued foods. Okay. Yeah, that's obviously the healthy way to go.
No, but it's just less greasy.
You're right.
Less leaky, I guess. All right. Anyhow.
So as for my field day, I didn't do a thing. So moving on.
All right. Well, that's good. You're relaxed. Did you think of radio at least?
I'm not sure that I did. I think I completely blotted it from my mind. Not necessarily intentionally. I think it just went that way.
Oh, and that's okay too.
So
there you go. Harrison's just sent in the show notes. He's sent a link to himself operating our club station with one of our crack CW guys. His name is Bob VA2RS, and he's one of our he's a diehard contester. This guy. So Harrison couldn't have been in better hands to get his tutelage.
Hold on.
I've caused dead air now.
No,
you can only see him from the back. So, but anyhow, that's the front of our communications trailer. For those of you, in the chat room, those of you listening via podcast, you can check our show notes, which Harrison will get on top of right away. Now that I've said this, and you'll be able to see the pictures or www.ve2clm.ca. So yeah, it was a lot of fun. I like field day. Field day is I'm not a contester by any means. I'm kind of when it comes to contesting, I'm more of a sniper. If I hear a contest, I'll come in and I'll hit up a few guys that are far away to see if I can actually get out if my signal radiates that far. But I can't say that I'm a diehard contester. I'm not even a not diehard contester, but field day is I guess because it's got that kind of emergency communications kind of vibe to it. and it operates over the 24 hours. It's kind of fun. Plus, we, you know, make a weekend out of it. So it's almost like a whole camping thing. The only thing missing for us is the beer, because we're a club and we promote to the general public. We don't have beer at on site.
Yeah, we never did as well, and I never really missed it. And I don't really consider Field Day a contest. It is a contest, but it's more about the emergency communication and the sort of togetherness of the community than it is any kind of generalized contest, which I'm not a fan of at all.
No, it's a little bit more laid back. I mean, some people are still, you know, 5'9" necks, 5'9" necks. But, you know, usually people, if you stop and ask them, so what's your setup? There's people running. What's the most we ran into was something like a 36 alpha, like something ridiculous like that. It's like, or 24 stations. I couldn't even fathom, you know, I mean, there must have been a bunch of engineers working at that Field Day, because you have to be within a given area. You can't spread your 25 stations across, you know, a county. You have to be within a few hundred yards. All of your antennas and transmitters have to be on one site. So to set up 24 stations and have them, even only having a quarter of them running at the same time, you know, you have to position your antennas and have filtration that's way beyond what I could come up with. And that was quite impressive. So it's always interesting to see what other people are doing, what other clubs are doing.
Yeah, it is. And it would have been nice to probably get out and do some Field Day stuff, but basically just completely blew by me.
And it happens. There'll be one next year. You're all good.
That's right. There will be one next year. So speaking of things that come around annually, it was just Canada Day yesterday.
It was.
And that's the equivalent of your or our Independence Day. Yes. I mean, that's sort of the same thing.
It is. Confederation. It's exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
Except that it's not in the same country.
Or on the same day.
Or it's in the same week, at least. It's kind of neat because they follow each other. So it's kind of two long weekends. We've kind of adopted the 4th of July unofficially, although it's not a holiday here. A lot of people seem to, you know, if you're doing business with the U.S. or whatever, there's a lot of businesses seem to be closed or slowed down anyways. A lot of people take that weekend off. And I know a lot of people who actually go visit you guys, you know, take this opportunity to go across and eat some hot dogs and see some fireworks. Yeah, we just had our 1st of July. RAC was holding its Canada Day contest, which I... a note from Harrison. Yes, I was going to mention it anyways, Harrison, which I took part in a little bit because in between our celebrations, kind of had nothing to do, so I hopped on the radio. But we basically have, you know, stuff happening around town. Same thing, same general concept, bouncy castles, hot dogs, and concerts at night and fireworks. So happy Canada Day to all of my Canadian friends, and happy 4th of July upcoming for all of my American friends.
Well, it will be post-dated by the time anyone actually hears it. So, yeah, happy previous 4th of July 2013 yes. to everybody here. And we haven't decided if we have plans yet, but we'll figure something out between now and then, I'm quite sure.
That's a long weekend for you guys, so I'm sure, you know, if nothing else, you could just kind of sit back and relax.
It's kind of a really long, long weekend for me because I'm actually leaving from here today, and I won't be back until Monday. So that's the kind of weekend I can handle.
That's good. Anything above 3 days, I find, seems like a week, especially if you have, you know, a few activities planned in there. You know, the weekend is just a weekend, but you add that extra day, it makes all the difference in the world.
Yep, and I plan to make the most of it one way or another. And I can probably do that by reading this guy, Pete, who is now a published author, apparently.
He is. That's me. Hooray. Yeah, I actually wrote a article months ago. We took a trip last year to Alberta, and I decked out my RV because I figured, well, this was the perfect opportunity. I'm going across the country, so I'm bringing everything I can that's ham radio related. We left on a 31-day journey to Alberta, is where we used to live, of course, about 2,500 miles from here, so it's a little bit of a journey. So I wrote an article about how I set up the RV. You know, it was an amateur radio article and not a travel log, and it's posted in July's TCA, which is the Canadian Amateur. It's the official publication of RAC, Radio Amateurs of Canada, which is the sister organization to the ARRL. So I'm very excited that they accepted my article. It's published in there. If you guys want to go see, you can go to the RAC website, rac.ca, and under file/TCA/TCA, July 2013, and you'll see it there. But it describes both my HF and VHF, UHF setups and how it all worked. And yeah, I'm very excited that they decided to publish me. So I'm not going to be rich or famous, but it's kind
of
neat.
It's always nice to have a little bit of an accolade under your belt, and I'm looking forward to reading it, actually. Probably we'll check it out over the next couple of days.
Yeah, very cool. I look forward to hearing your feedback. The TCA in July, the theme is operating outside the shack. So the picture on the cover is actually a picture of Chris Hadfield in the space shuttle, or in the space station, sorry. And they have a guy who operates Bicycle Mobile. I haven't read all of the articles yet, but it's all dedicated to operating outside the shack. You know, with summer coming, it's very apropos, I guess. So, yeah, it's very cool, very excited. And I'm looking forward to rereading my article, but in the magazine instead of just reading it, you know, on my computer, the original Word document.
Sounds good. You can proofread it after it's already been proofread.
Yeah, several times, believe me. I don't think I've ever worked, I can't say I worked hard. You know, writing comes relatively easy to me, but writing well does not. So I actually had to do a little bit of research and reread and, you know, actually used a thesaurus. I don't know, it was fun. It was a neat experience. It probably took me about 4 months to write it and rewrite it and rewrite it again. So it's a good experience.
Well, it's good. At least you put some time into it. So we know it'll be worth the read.
Yeah, well, you know, I figure if they published it, it's worth somebody's read.
Okay. Well, let's see. What's next? Oh, now we get into, like, some actual content. So last episode, I guess, we were talking about Manjaro, or it came up in conversation, and you said, well, I'm going to go out and try that because I said it's really easy. And you said, well, if a noob can do it, then I'm going to give it a try. So apparently you did. So what did you think of it?
I only tried it really quick, though. I must admit, I haven't had a lot of time the last few weeks with everything happening in terms of a year end and et cetera. Not that I'm making excuses, but I'm holding the CD in my hands. You can hear the paper jacket waving. But I downloaded the ISO version. I haven't installed it yet. I haven't tried, but I downloaded, we're talking about Manjaro Mate version 0.8.6, which we mentioned a couple of weeks ago. I tried the live CD. I tried it on my IBM T43, which is an older machine, 1.86 gig processor, and it's got about 500 megs of RAM. And it actually was a lot swifter. Just a live CD was, you know, which usually aren't that speedy, or can be, but not necessarily. The live CD actually made my T43 speedier than the onboard OS, which was kind of interesting. So I'm looking forward to installing it. So I only played with it for about a couple hours, surfed around, checked it out. I don't find it that different to a whole lot of other distributions that I hear a lot of people say, try this one, try that one, try the other one. This one's cool, that one's cool. I kind of find them all the same. I mean, Linux Mint, you know, Manjaro, HamOS, they all have generally the same feel. And even when it comes to the different desktops, there's not a whole lot of difference. So just because it made my laptop speedier, I'm going to put it on and see what it does. But I haven't played with it extensively. But so far, two thumbs up. I think it was definitely very easy to download, easy to find, and very, very intuitive once it's on there. So I do recommend it, even at this early stage in my experimentation.
So did you notice anything unusual about it? The fact that the package manager is not something you might have been used to? Did that seem to trip you up at all, or was it just easy to use regardless?
No, because I've played with a whole bunch of different distributions, I didn't find anything that I couldn't handle. But like I said, you know, 2 hours of mucking around, some of it was just looking at what the graphic capabilities were and seeing what drivers were kind of loaded natively and stuff. It was all, you know, first shot, like seriously, super easy. But I'll know more as I play. Like I said, when I want to install it and use it for a good week solid, I can't give a fair and detailed analysis just with the live CD. But yeah, I liked it a lot.
And the interface was, I thought the interface was really clean, which was one of the things I liked about it. I don't know how it works as far as, you know, the installation of codecs and stuff like that, where Mint tends to make that really easy because they include like flash and audio codecs and video codecs and stuff like that. But of course, you didn't really get into it far enough, I assume, to watch DVDs.
No, I did not.
Okay, well, maybe a more in-depth look later on.
And yeah, this is going to be an ongoing theme. I just wanted to mention it since I was very excited about having downloaded it and try it. My first foray into Manjaro. So, but like I said, I don't see you know a lot more. You've been playing with it a long time. You know a lot more of the intricacies between the different flavors. You know, you probably see a lot of things that I don't. That's why I say as a somewhat noob, I find that a lot of these, especially the Debian based versions, which I played with mostly, they kind of almost all look the same. You know, they're not all that different from one to the other. So, you know, I guess over the years too, because of my career, I've played with so many different OSs that maybe it just kind of comes easy. I'm not sure. It's interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting. More points to ponder, which we will do so in an upcoming episode.
Yes, a more philosophical episode.
one where I'm actually focused.
Yeah. You're doing fine.
I don't know about that. But anyway, I'm going to move the stuff that you had next to after the break, because I think we've rambled amazingly enough. And we'll talk about some other stuff. The next topic, the GIMP, is one that I was actually using today and really enjoying. So we'll have more to say on that. And for those people who are waiting for the BeagleBone drawing, that will happen after, well, sort of in the third segment towards the end of the show. So stick with us. It'll be there. Or if you don't want to stick with us, there's always the fast forward button. Unless you're listening live, in which case you're stuck. You got to listen. So
I could talk faster.
Well, we could, but that might be bad.
Probably.
Okay, well, we've got some music. We're going to throw that on, and we'll relax for 3 minutes or so, and then we'll come back and talk some more about some interesting topics related to technology, more Linux-centric than ham radio-centric now, but we sort of wasted the whole first segment on Field Day, so there you go.
We didn't waste it. Okay. There's ham radio people who listen.
probably more than not, so.
It's a good thing they're all good-natured.
That's right. But I actually took all of the back music that you had suggested and put it into this episode. I'm not sure it's all the tunes, but you get at least two of them.
Yeah, not all of them, but I've been harassing you with a lot of music. But yes, indeed, I noticed that.
So let's do this up. This first one is one you suggested a little while back. It's a song called Rex Mundi, which for those who may not know, translates to King of the World.
Very good.
And it's by a band called Studebaker's Blacksmith Shop, which I didn't bother to actually look up anything about them. You put in here that they're from Germany and that the song was released back in June of 2010. Mm-hmm. But that's all I know about them. Of course, you can find them on Jamendo. Just look up Studebaker's Blacksmith Shop. The album is Nebula. And we're going to go ahead and listen to Rex Mundi, and then we'll talk about the GIMP. Actually, see, I'm all discombobulated here.
You can cut that out. Sorry.
Yeah. Here we go. I think they're trying to see how long they can make that fade out last.
I'm the king of the world. Yeah, I like that tune. It's a nice boppy tune.
Yeah, it definitely kind of gets the feet tapping and the blood racing and all that kind of thing. Nice, nice going down the road song.
Yeah, yeah. It's dangerous. Makes you want to go faster.
Yes, go faster music.
No.
Some of my favorites. So let's talk about the GIMP, and I was actually just using the GIMP today. It's kind of a thing that really fits my workflow whenever I have to do any kind of graphic or photo manipulation. I am totally a fan of the GIMP. I know a lot of people will say that you need something that maybe is a little less powerful for, you know, your everyday photo editing. If you just want to do like red eye reduction or crop a photo to a certain size or, you know, stuff like that. But as time has gone on and as GIMP has sort of advanced as a graphical manipulation tool, it has really, really gotten better. It's a software package that really fits my brain well. I've used some of the other editors. I've even used some of the high dollar editors that one like that we probably shouldn't mention, but it's Photoshop. But honestly, I think the GIMP is just easier to use. I think the tool has become very layman friendly. Once you sort of get how they do things, if you're coming from Photoshop, it's going to seem really hard. If you're not tainted by that, it's going to seem really easy. I think it's a fantastic tool. And when they integrated the single pane design so that it wasn't all broken out into toolboxes and stuff like that, that made it the 100% package for me. So, if you need to do graphic or photo manipulation, you should definitely check out the GIMP. I think it's like the gold standard when it comes to open source based tools of this type. It's worth a try if you haven't tried it. So, what's your take?
Yeah, I'd have to agree. I agree with you that they got a whole lot many more bonus points when they went to from 1,000 windows and dumbed that down. Although it was, once you got used to it, it wasn't that big of a deal. Because when I work with graphical software, I tend to spread out as well quite a bit. So, that being said, yes, were you using the latest release, the one we're talking about, the 2.8.6, which is was released a few days ago?
If you give me a second while you're talking, I can probably tell you exactly what version I was using, because I don't know that off the top of my head. But I know it's one where it has the single window view, and I believe that came out in, I thought it was 2.8.6. I thought they were later than that, but maybe I'm mistaken. Maybe I built it before it was actually released, and that's why I have it.
And that's possible too. Yeah, it was just released a couple of days ago. The 2.8.6 was released a couple of days ago. I couldn't tell you when they went to a unique window from several windows, though. I haven't been following it that closely. I just came across it scanning, the various articles of Linux news so that I could, not just talk about ham radio, but talk about some Linuxy stuff. And came across that today. It was released. Let's see. Yeah, it was a couple of days ago, but I don't have the exact date.
I think it was actually
today's Linux today.
I think I'm a minor revision behind, because I was thinking it was 2.8.6, but I think it was actually 2.7.6 where they developed the integrated panel display. But kudos to the developers for putting in that feature, but leaving the old feature for those people who liked it the other way. You can actually concatenate all your windows, or you can explode them back out into individual toolbars, if you want to. They gave it to you both ways.
Yeah, and that's great.
I was using 2.8.2.
Okay, so you're not that far.
Nope.
Because what they've done since then is probably just more in the, fixing bugs realm. But I'd have to agree. I love the GIMP. I think the GIMP, like you said, is the equivalent to what would be Photoshop. Photoshop being, if you buy the Creative Suite, which is the whole package, is over a grand here, over $1,000. So nothing to be sneezed at, and the GIMP is equally or more powerful. I use this professionally. I actually use Photoshop professionally, have absolutely no problems with it. I've been working with it for 20 years. I love it, despite the fact that it's from the evil corporation, Adobe. But that being said, it's still a really good software. It does what you need. To answer your comment before, if you're just using it to do red eye reduction, honestly, get out of photography. There's no reason that you should have red eyes in a photo, as far as I'm concerned.
Don't chase off all the photographers in the audience.
I want to chase off all the
badger
photographers. That's kind of the basics. I kid, of course, I kid. There's a lot of point and shooters out there who do need to, do some red eye reduction, and that's okay. But the GIMP is probably beyond what you need. If you wish to explore, more power to you. I did come from Photoshop before I discovered the GIMP, and I discovered the GIMP way back when it was... I can't remember which version really for the life of me, but it had all the exploded windows, and I didn't find it to be that complicated to use. It's different than Photoshop. All the things aren't exactly in the same place, and the nomenclature isn't the same, but I guess because I've been working with this kind of software for so long, it didn't really take that long for me to figure out what did what kind of thing. But I did, you know, have, you know, about 10 years of Photoshop behind me, so I'm sure that helped. But, you know, you can't sneeze at the price. It's a really powerful tool, and I recommend you guys go check it out, download it, and just install it and play with it. Even if you can't figure it out at first, you'll figure it out eventually. Anybody who likes to do photography, whether it be point and shoot or you know, more serious photography, because it's okay to do red eye reduction, and you know, you can resize this, but a lot of the free image manipulation softwares are quite basic, and you can't really go past cropping and red eye reduction if you want to do anything else. You know, sometimes you have to use a couple of different softwares. So it's a cool thing.
As a pro tip on the GIMP, what I would definitely say is, if you're interested in like the tool that has the most power inside the tool, what I would do is I would fire up the GIMP and I would go to Google and I would explore the path tool. I don't think there's any more powerful tool in the GIMP toolkit than the path tool. I don't think there's anything you can't do with it. And it's a pretty intuitive tool as well. I mean, but the things you can do with it are almost limitless. And if you go out and, you know, say, well, I've got this picture and I want to do this to it. Like I want to change the background gradient, or I want to remove something that I don't want to be in there, or I want to create text in a circle, or, you know, it's just like whatever you can think of that you might imagine you want to do in graphic manipulation, you can do with the path tool. And it's truly amazing. I was signing up for a meetup today and I wanted to put a picture of my motorcycle on there. And I had a picture of my motorcycle, but it was taken in my garage and it was like surrounded by tables and chairs and a bag of cat food and stuff like this. None of which is conducive to a good, you know, studly picture of your motorcycle. So I used the path tool to actually like trace my motorcycle, remove the background, and put it on a starburst gradient. So it actually looked really cool. All done with the GIMP in about 3 minutes. Amazingly powerful.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just trying to figure out what some of the changes are, but yeah, it's kind of, I don't know who wrote this. I don't think they could speak English, but it says in general. So what's different between the last version and this version? Under the general section, lots of bug fixes, lots of translation updates. It's like, yeah, that's pretty specific. What bugs? How did you fix it? I could say that. I fixed all the bugs. It's like, no. They added the Hungarian translation installer for all of our Hungarian listeners. So now you know, Hungary can take part in the GIMP as well.
We are definitely multinational, you know, because we talked about Czechoslovakian logging programs, and we learned a little bit. We learned a little bit of Czech, and now we're learning Hungarian. And Jay Lindsay in the chat room has said that without crappy photographers, we wouldn't have features like red eye reduction. So we should thank them.
Yes, indeed. Thank you, Jay Lindsay.
All people who do things wrong so the software can make it right.
So I don't think that was what they had planned in the beginning. But
no,
if it works,
not.
More power to everyone. Problems with that.
So anyway, the GIMP. Go get it. Try it. You'll like it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really cool.
And then here's a blast from the past for a total non sequitur of a segue. I remember going over to my godparents' house using their old IBM PC and firing up the CGA graphics of Leisure Suit Larry back in the mid-80s.
Yeah, just about, eh?
Yeah. And
I saw this story, too, and it blew me away.
Apparently, just like Duke Nukem Forever finally came out and was a total flop, Leisure Suit Larry is coming back.
So I think Leisure Suit Larry has a bit of an advantage over Duke Nukem, though, because Duke Nukem, if you remember, when he came out, the new version, you know, they were trying to compete with all the other, you know, crazy war games out there, first-person shooter, blah, 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 and I think he was just too late. Leisure Suit Larry, however, because of the nature of the game, has a much better chance, I think.
Well, you think we're all pervs? Is that what it is? And the high quality graphics will make it like, you know,
exactly. That's exactly what I think.
WXVGA pornography. Is that,
No, not at all. Actually, for those who don't know, Leisure Suit Larry, they from the retro news item on Linux Today, Leisure Suit Larry is the Super Mario of filthy Sierra Adventures games from the 80s and 90s. And for those of you who aren't familiar, there was no full frontal nudity with Leisure Suit Larry. It was all sort of, how shall I say, conjecture and innuendo. And
8-bit pornography where there was anything. It's basically a lot of tan pixels.
Yeah, well, that's basically what they're heading for again. They claim that there's no full frontal nudity, no four-letter words, and no on-screen sex. But they've kept their comedic priorities. Of course, for those who don't know, Leisure Suit Larry was basically exactly what it was. This guy in a leisure suit, little cartoon in a leisure suit, who would go around and try to pick up women and do unspeakable things to them. So Larry is the story of a man on the make, and the game drips with innuendo, flirts with perversity, and oozes sexuality from every pixelated pore. That's their tagline. So everybody's running out now to, and I think we've just traumatized poor Harrison there in the text box. But yeah, they have expanded puzzles, expanded locations. Let's see, gorgeous all new high res 16:9 backgrounds, 3,000 frames of hand drawn animation, sophisticated lighting. How difficult is that in a cartoon? You light it the way you want. You just draw in the lighting. Thousands of humorous responses allow players to enjoy exploring everything on screen. Hilarious branching dialogue boxes. Vegas-style musical score. I don't know if that's a selling feature.
Little Wayne Newton never hurt anybody.
But what's really cool is it's fully voiced by the actors who originated the roles, which is kind of neat. So for PC, Mac, iOS, Android, and now available on Linux.
Wow, Android, huh?
Okay. For the perv on the go.
How much does that cost?
Don't be doing that when you're driving your motorcycle, though.
No, I don't plan on it.
That was a blast from the past, so I had to mention it. I'm sure a lot of people, if you haven't played it, you've at least heard about it, all of us geeks who were around in the mid-80s.
So are we going to have like an in-depth review? Because we're all going to go out and buy it, right?
You have to buy it. It's available on Linux, therefore it's free.
Are you just because it's available for Linux. Well, yeah, I guess. It doesn't have to be open source. Just because it runs on Linux.
No, it doesn't. But I didn't run into any part of the article that said that they were going to charge for it either. So I guess I just assumed I should not do that.
Well, we'll have to check it out. Yeah, we'll have our we'll definitely have our in-depth review.
Oh, in depth.
That's right, in depth. No innuendo intended.
No, right. Not at all.
Okay. Anyway, yeah, Leisure Suit Larry. That's definitely a blast from the past. I still remember spending many an afternoon playing that game when I was a young lad.
Just a ute.
Just a ute. Yeah. No, a ute is what they call a sport utility vehicle in Australia.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah. Yeah. A ute.
I guess those guys haven't seen my cousin Vinny.
I think I saw my cousin Vinny like ages ago, but couldn't tell you what was in it.
That's where that's Joe Pesci, and that's what he says. He calls them a ute.
A ute.
When I was a ute.
The ute of America. The ute of Canada. All right. Enough about Leisure Suit Larry and utes.
Indeed. I wasn't even planning on spending that much time on it. I was just going to read a paragraph and move on. Should have known better.
You should have put the little time indicator on it. We would have spent less time with it. All right, so you found something called AV Linux, which, I don't know, seems like maybe in the depths of my mind we might have touched on that back around episode like 6 or something, but I don't remember a single thing about it, so what have you found out about it?
Well, I only found out about it today. So
found out? You found food out?
I found out. Found out about today. About it today. It's been released for quite some time. It's a Debian-based Linux distribution. Its origins are here in Canada, although I could not find which province exactly. It's an i386 architecture, and it comes with LXD and OpenBox desktops. And it is, let's see, it's a 2.9 gig download, downloaded for me in 21 minutes. I'm also holding the DVD in my hands, the ISO, but I have not had a chance to actually play with it yet. The reason that I was interested is because I professionally am a multimedia technician, and I've been working in multimedia and audiovisual pretty much all my life. So I was intrigued, but I seen a couple of screenshots. It looks kind of nifty, but I haven't played with it yet. I've read a little bit about it, and I'm intrigued to see what it can do. But I have yet to try it, but I wanted to mention it, because it's, let's see, it's got 140 hits per day, according to the, AV Linux people, I guess. So it's somewhat popular, I'm guessing. I'm not sure what other distributions, I'm sure Mint gets like, you know, thousands, but this is a very little known based distribution. You weren't familiar with this one at all, were you?
Not from reading about it in the little blurb you have here. I want to say I might have heard about it in the past, and I think we may even have talked about it, because I talked about some audio video type Linux distributions in the past, like Ubuntu Studio and stuff like that, and I'm not sure AV Linux was one of the ones that came up.
They claim that they, from version 5 to 6, they've switched from the 2.x kernel to the 3.x Linux kernel for better hardware support. Let's see, what else did I highlight here? Includes a fairly basic installation functions, yada, yada, yeah. That's fine, gives you enough control to partition, blah, blah, blah. A lot of other distributions do that too. One of the things that make it great as a live distro is the many extra drivers and a lot of proprietary audio and video hardware that are included, sound card, graphics card, MIDI controllers, much more. Let's see. They've also loaded tons of pre-installed video and audio editing software, so I'm sure the latest version of the GIMP is on there. And they use LXDE. And they claim that they use LXDE that makes, let's see, what did they claim? The use of LXDE and its policies on screensavers mean it can eke every bit of power from your system to make sure latency and rendering are the best possible. It does not use a lot of non-free software to achieve this. They claim, the people doing the review, Linux Today, say that it's possibly the perfect audio editing suite based on Linux, especially for one that's already out of the box, so to speak. So I've downloaded it. It's in my hands, and I'm going to try it out and see if it impresses me or not. I doubt it will, but you never know.
I can just see you sitting in front of a computer, putting your DVD in and going, okay, impress me.
Pretty much. And then I'll go, it does the same as all the other versions I've tried. So what's so special about this one? So no, I actually want to put this one in and play with some of the video and audio editing software. One of the problems we have professionally at work is that because we work in technology, it's hard to keep up with the latest and greatest, but yet that's what your customer demands. But technology is expensive. So I'm always looking for ways to make our older machines be a little bit more performance oriented. So I've finally managed to sell our bosses on setting up a few of our older machines on Linux. Machines we're not using, of course. That way they don't have to worry about me wrecking them, because they have no idea what Linux is at work. Of course, they're all Microsoft people, and that they're not programmers. Our bosses are just administrators, so they have very little technical skills. If it were, I hope they're not listening. If you are, I love you guys. But that being said, it's not their job. It's the tech's job to be techie, and it's the administrator's job to be administrative-y. And so we finally have sold them on the fact, or I have, because I've been playing with it for a few years. I figured, well, I could probably install, a distribution on here that would work for what we need to do. So I'm actually going to try this out and see if I can get some of our older machines. Like this T43 here, this one of the reasons that it's here is because I'm trying different different packages, not packages, but distributions on it, to see if I can make it a little speedier, because one of the reasons, this is one of my work machines, one of the reasons we took it off the floor is because people were complaining about how slow it was, even for silly things like, you know, PowerPoint with a few images on them, not even a full multimedia support. So if I can resurrect a few machines, I'll earn some brownie points and make my life easier in the process.
Sounds like a win-win, and hopefully you won't like lose your job or anything.
No, because like I said, they're letting me play with the machines that they're going to kill off anyway, so I have nothing to lose. I can't destroy them anymore. Well, I can, but I mean, they won't care because they're not using them. They're just, this T-43 is easily, let's see, you know, 11 or 12 years old, so.
No, I meant for calling them tech noobs.
Yeah, well, they are.
Here, can I hand you a spade? Would you like to dig that hole a little bit deeper?
I know, but I get paid for what I do, and they get paid for what I do. I have no idea what they do for their jobs. I don't want to do their jobs. They do what they like, and I do what I like, and everybody's happy.
Sounds good. All right. Well, since they've started shooting off fireworks here, we should probably move things along.
Huh? They're 2 days off. They're earlier fireworks.
Well, we get about a 20-day window on either side of the 4th here to actually legally make noise. So they've started early.
Good. So are these official fireworks or just a bunch of rednecks in the field behind your house shooting Roman candles at your window?
The latter.
But at least they're having fun.
Yes, they must be having fun.
It's okay to do that as long as you wave a flag.
That's exactly right. So what's this deal with Firefox? Does this mean that we no longer have to have an ice weasel?
No, my notes. What have I done? I'm losing it. All right, we'll be editing that part. Firefox's new logo. The tagline was Mozilla's new Firefox logo is a lot like the old Firefox logo. And that's really what attracted my attention. It's like the first thing is like, well, why bother? And one of the reasons that tagline attracted my attention is because years ago I worked in Alberta in Banff, a place called the Banff Center, internationally renowned art school. And the Banff Center changed its logo. They spent thousands of dollars changing their logo. They unveiled this logo and it basically looked the same as the new logo. So everybody was laughing. And why did they spend all that money developing a logo that was the same? And then, you know, the people who are the designers, oh no, but it's fuchsia instead of purple. You know, it's like they're trying to kind of sell their point. So when I saw this, I kind of said the same thing. And basically, the Mozilla people admit it. It is a lot like the old one. What they're trying to do is they're trying to optimize their logo so that it looks crisper and cleaner on smaller and lower resolution screens. And at first I was thinking, well, why the hell do you want to do that? But they're, you know, targeting portable devices, which have smaller screens. So I'm thinking bigger is better. You know, usually you want to improve your graphics, but wasn't thinking about the portable device. And this is probably because my cell phone is about as old as this T43 next to me. So these things don't come to me intuitively, I guess. But there's six things that they've basically changed. And mostly it has to do with sort of the shine on the graphics, very subtle changes that are, I don't know if I can just get to the right page in my notes.
I actually found an image on Engadget that shows sort of the evolution of the Mozilla logo. And
that's what I was looking at, exactly. Yeah.
And it's, while they are very similar, you can actually see the differences. They're not so similar that you can't tell what they changed. And,
I had to look at them side by side, because if you look at one and then, you know, if, let's say you were looking at them in a book and they were on different pages, I would have had trouble. Like seeing them side by side makes it a little bit more obvious, but they're not super obvious.
Well, one thing, there's a couple of things that I noticed. The first is that they are putting less detail into the globe part and more detail into the fox part. They have significantly reduced the amount of gloss, and they're making the fox tail more colorized. There's more variance in the color, whereas the globe part is almost just a blue sphere at this point. I mean, when you see it larger, you can see some detail, but on a smaller screen, you're just going to see blue. So I think they're just moving the emphasis to the fox of the Firefox, as opposed to the globe that it surrounds.
Yeah, yeah, they claim that they're trying to remove details that weren't critical in the overall image, and especially if their goal is to make things smaller. So, like you say, putting more emphasis on the colors in the tail, which is, you know, what attracts your eye, probably the first thing because of the, you know, kind of orange and yellowish hues in there. It's the first thing that you kind of see. So the one that made me laugh that I thought was funny is the arm of the fox now extends from the shoulder instead of layering behind his chest. And yeah, you can see that, but you know, I don't know. They just made such a big deal out of it. It's like, yeah, look at that. It's awesome. It's like, yeah, but I don't know. I guess if you have a mobile device, you'll be able to enjoy a cleaner, crisper Mozilla Firefox logo.
I was hoping they would just change the licensing of the image so we wouldn't have to have a whole separate distribution of a web browser just because of their stupid logo. But it doesn't look like they're quite that enlightened yet.
All in good time.
All right, well, we got to do some more music, and then we're going to give away a BeagleBone Black. How's that sound?
That sounds awesome.
All right,
I'm excited. Am I going to win?
You are not going to win. There's a 100% chance that you will not win. There's also a 100% chance that I will not win.
Well, see, at least you've gotten to hold it. I won't even see it.
That's right. Harrison, however, does have a chance to win. He is in the drawing. So
I noticed that.
So anyway, let me go ahead and play some more of your music. This one's a song that I brought up a couple episodes ago, and I was wondering about the beginning of it because it's a little interesting.
Scary.
Yeah. But anyway, the song is pretty good. This one's called Little Sister by a band called The Very Unknown Friends of Jane Doe. Another German band. You seem to favor the Germans when it comes to music.
Yeah, not really. I don't know. You had a German theme tonight, but I found these guys quite by accident a little while ago, and I thought it was a very interesting tune. Although, like Russ said, the beginning is does not fit the rest of the song, so I don't know why they did that.
I don't either. But hold on to your hats because we're gonna play it right now, and then we'll give away some hardware, and it's done.
Oh, that was quick.
Yeah, done. Over. Fini.
Forgotten about that.
Well, good. It means it's over and we can get to giving away stuff.
Hooray.
Okay.
In case you're wondering, there's the very interesting apologies to people listening on the podcast, but in the chat room, there's a very interesting conversation going on about amplifiers and tubes, which is kind of neat. So if you think we're not ham-centric enough, well, just have a look at the... Sorry, I muted myself.
Right in the middle of your talking. That's a new one.
I don't know. I'll just let you carry on.
All right. So we do have some social media stuff to talk about later on and all that kind of stuff. But we had a contest. It's been going for about a month now, and that contest was to give away a BeagleBone Black. This contest was open to all subscribers of the show, paid subscribers, that is. So if you are a paid subscriber or were a paid subscriber as of midnight today, you know, several hours ago, you were automatically entered to win the BeagleBone Black. And if you did not want to pay money to enter, all you had to do was give us a call and tell us why you deserved a BeagleBone Black. Well,
I was actually going to call and make like some stupid little funny old voice, you know, hello, this is Mrs. Old Lady, and see if you're going to fall for it. But I didn't have time. Next contest.
Yeah, next contest. We did get 5 audio entries, and I'm going to go ahead and play those now.
Ah, cool.
And I'm going to do my best to cut out the bits where they give phone numbers and all that stuff so that, you know, of course, it'll be cut out in the released version, but I just want to make sure I give as little information away to the people who are listening live. So we had 5 here, so I'm going to go ahead and play those. Let's see, the first one, make sure I can actually do these correctly here. The first one should be by Jonathan Netto, and he's...
You're sure that's not Jonathan Netto? He might be a paisan.
No, he's not. He's actually been on the show before.
All right.
We
love you, Jonathan.
Jonathan Netto?
It's a French name, Jonathan Netto.
Yes, it is. I know. He prefers to not pronounce it that way. as you will soon hear. So anyway, Jonathan Netto is our first caller on the contest, and let's hope this actually plays where people can hear it. So here's Jonathan.
Hey, Linux in the Ham Shack. I was calling about the BeagleBoard Black Contest, and I deserve the BeagleBoard Black Contest. Oh, by the way, this is Jonathan Netto. I'm the executive director of the Accessible Computing Foundation, and I deserve the BeagleBone Black because I myself am blind and have done some homework on this and noticed there's a very good chance I can make this accessible to blind people and people with other disabilities. So I would like to get my hand on this fantastic product and see what I can do with it and bring accessible computing to people with this inexpensive device. So thank you for the great show, and we will talk to you soon.
Excellent. Thanks, Jonathan.
Yeah, and the only problem with this contest I now see is that since there is no basis on winning for merit of your entry, all of that effort was wasted because it's just a random number. But I was hoping more of the contest entries would be sort of comical rather than serious, because it makes me feel bad that he may not win, even though he has a real reason to have one of these things. So, but such is life.
Indeed.
So the second one we got is from Corey Klumper. And let me go ahead and cue that bad boy up.
Corey Klumper. C'est français, lui aussi.
Don't try and francophone everything. Because I don't think Klumper is Canadian. I'm guessing it's probably German or some descent like that. But anyway, here's this one. And I think I'm going to have to cut parts of this one out. So bear with me.
This is Corey Klumper, KD0QEA. Address is good on QRZ. And email address is Corey.Klumper. And I deserve a BeagleBone Black because Badger. That's why.
Yeah, see, now that's what we're looking for.
There you go. And we have a winner.
Yeah, in that case, it's good that you can't win based on merit. Because that probably would not have been the winner. Oh, fireworks going
points,
on.
Points for funny, though.
Yes, it was very good. I don't know if that was my favorite one or not, but it was a good one. So the next
are those
one.
Fireworks going off behind you?
Yes, they are.
Seriously, I thought you were like tapping the table or something.
Oh, no, no. No, these are the smaller ones. The microphone didn't seem to pick up on some of the lower frequency ones, but...
Like, are you outside in the field watching the fireworks while you're recording?
No, I'm just sitting
so
next.
Clear.
I'm sitting next to an open window.
Okay. Well,
so
you got a show. Excellent.
Yeah, and actually, it'll kind of add to the 4th of July feel of this episode, I guess.
And we could say that the fireworks are for the winners of the BeagleBone Black.
And Ted in the chat room says, "Badger, damn it." We'll probably have to badger the damn it part. So we have badger.
There you go.
All right. The next one is from, who is the next one from? From Soren Strasberg. Soren Strarup. I'm guessing. I believe he is Belgian of descent, now living in the U.S. And here is his entry.
I deserve a bigger board flag because I have an SDR kit and a sensor report. And the call sign here is Alpha Kilo 4, Whiskey Quebec. Bye.
All right.
Soren's a long way from home. He's from Tennessee.
Yeah, well, now, apparently.
Not from. He lives in Tennessee.
He lives in Tennessee. So that's right. From home, so. I guess he's technically from there now.
Yeah, I guess.
Okay, fourth one from Steven Goldberg. So get this one queued up. We'll hit it.
Good evening. This is Steven, W3SFG, Whiskey 3 Sierra Foxtrot Golf. My email address is W3SFG. And I deserve a BeagleBone Black because as a child, I would often ask my parents to buy me a small battery-powered Linux-based computing platform to use for experimentation and mischief, only to be lashed in with metaphoric stories of children leaping lemon-like from the local bridge or of the poor children in distant lands living in the squalor of a DOS-based operating system. If I'm given a BeagleBone Black, I will have $45 to allocate for such noble causes as the purchase of electronic components on eBay that will better prepare me to respond to life-threatening emergencies and the strenuous needs of HF contesting. Please help me.
Very good.
Yeah.
So you're going to survive the apocalypse with $45, if I understand correctly, Stephen. Good luck.
If he can figure out how to make that work, he needs to get in contact with me.
Yeah, absolutely. That's awesome.
All right.
I don't even have $45. I'm done for.
So the last one is from Jason Miles, which we'll play next. And that will be the last of the voice entries. So here we go.
Hi, this is Jason Miles. I'm calling about the BeagleBone Black contest. Just to answer your question, I did a BeagleBone Black because I like to tinker. I like flavors like the Raspberry Pi. I'll to try this one out. Your podcast, I like it. So I'd like to win the contest. Thanks a lot. Bye.
All righty then. So are you getting the dropouts?
Yes, okay. I'm not getting anybody's phone number or email address.
Well, You're doing good. Yeah, not necessarily caring if you get them. I just didn't want to divulge them, you know, to everybody. Now,
very professional. Good on you.
So one last thing is that we got a subscription from John, the nice guy Spriggs, who has sent us email in the past and is a longtime listener of the show. But unfortunately, John, based on the rules outlined before, your subscription came a few hours too late.
Russ, the not nice guy.
Yes, I know. I apologize, John, but you will be entered in any future raffles that we do here. I did say midnight on July 2nd, and his was several hours late, unfortunately. So, John, apologies, but you cannot win the BeagleBone Black this time around. But we would definitely like to thank you for being a subscriber to the show and look forward to, you know, entry in whatever future things we decide to do. Here's how this is going to work. There are 26 entries. I have a little PHP script that has been generating random numbers from 1 to 26 since the show started. It's been spitting out random numbers at me the whole time. What we're going to do is I'm going to close my eyes. I'm going to hit a drum roll. Actually, I'm probably going to hit the drum roll and then close my eyes. When the drum roll stops, then I'm going to stop the random number generator from generating numbers. And the very last number that it spits out is going to be the number. I'm going to count down the list of the 26 people I've got here. And that's the person who's going to win it.
Drum roll, please.
After an hour and a half of generating random numbers, the number it quit on was number one.
Woo! Yay, number one. Yay, number one. Excellent.
So number one on our list is Jonathan Nadeau.
Jonathan Nadeau, félicitations. That's right.
Yep, he is number one on the list.
Excellent. Now you don't have to feel bad.
That's right.
It all works out.
I know. There's some kind of weird karma going on there.
Very cool. Well, he deserves it. And I think his reason was more than valid. So, and I think no one will argue that Jonathan deserves this awesome, awesome prize. So good on you, Jonathan. I think that's very cool.
Yeah, I think that's very cool, too. And as a matter of fact, I'm going to try and take a screenshot of this just so no one can say I was lying.
Or you could just take a picture of yourself holding up your finger. Not the middle one.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. All right. Well, I think I've got a screenshot there. But anyway, yeah, it was, let's see, here's the last few numbers. It was 16, 17, 13, 9, 12, 26, 14, 13, 7, 22, 8, and then 1. And that was the way it ended. So congratulations to Jonathan Nadeau for winning the BeagleBone Black, and we'll be in touch, Jonathan, on how to get that over to you, although your presence on the intertubes is fairly widespread, so it shouldn't be that difficult. Sorry to everybody who didn't win this time around, but we will be having another contest at some point. We'll be giving some other cool thing away, I'm sure, and stay tuned for that. So,
kind of toying with the idea of drawing a date with me.
Drawing a date with you?
Yeah, you could win a date with Pete.
Don't you have a wife?
Yeah, it's not that kind of date.
Oh, okay, I see.
I'm just kidding. Let's just cut that out. That just went nowhere. I apologize. No, I apologize right now.
All right, let's do the social media roundup and let's get the hell out of here because I've got places to go and 150 miles to drive. So
places to go, people to see.
That's right. So I'm going to leave this to you. Tell us who is following us nowadays. Who are our stalkers for this week?
Yeah, well, actually, we have quite a few, which is very exciting. We have a new follower on Twitter. Please correct me if these people are not new, but they're just re-subscribers or if they've changed their, identifier in any way, but NF7T, November Foxtrot 7 Tango, Jake G, following us on Twitter now. He is from Idaho, and his tagline says that he's got 109 countries worked. He's a contester, emergency communications, DX chasing, teaches ham radio classes. Good on you, Jake. That's awesome. PODXS070. I have no idea what that is. Feldheld, EPC geocaching and ATV riding, which goes well with geocaching, I'm sure. So welcome, Jake. We're glad to have you aboard, and we're glad to have you following us. Do you know Jake?
No, I do not know Jake. NF7T, that's a new call sign for me, but thanks, Jake, for following us and for being a listener of the show.
Yeah, very good. All coming out of the woodwork now. We have James George, who sent us a like on Facebook, Linux in the Ham Sack. So shout out to James. Thanks a lot. Paul Schwann, which is actually a friend of mine who lives in Florida and for FTD, has added us on Google Plus. So hello, Paul. Glad to have you aboard. Member of the South Coast Amateur Radio Service, South Cars, and one of the audio, one of the staff from the audio editing department at South Cars. So me and Paul did a lot of the editing for the original Waveguides episode. So good on you, Paul, and welcome aboard. Let's see, under subscribers and donators, we have Walter J, WN7LIF, Whiskey November 3, Lima and the Foxtrot, WN3 and not WN7, from Pennsylvania, who's given us a yearly subscription and a new website registration. So welcome aboard, Walter. Glad to have you. And as we heard before, John the Nice Guy Spriggs is also a new registration on the website. What was he? He must have been registered before, or was he a listener? Because I know I hear the name kind of on every podcast out there.
Yeah, he was a listener, but not a paid subscriber. He's apparently just did that today.
Oh, very good. Well, welcome, John, and hope to say hi to you personally one day, because I hear your name all over the place, so I'd love to chat it up, see if you're really a nice guy. let's see. No email feedback, no posts on Google Plus this week. It was quiet on that front, so that wraps it up for me, unless you have something to add, Russ.
No, as a matter of fact, I don't. I do believe we have some feedback, but unfortunately, we're not going to be able to get to it this episode. We will get to it next time around on the big 111. But yeah, human beings like to put stock in numbers and stuff like that, even though they have no significance whatsoever.
Well, there's something to be said in photography. There's a concept called repetition of form. And when you take certain forms and you repeat them in the image, it becomes, you know, aesthetically pleasing. So 111 could fall into that category.
That's true. It does seem to be very aesthetically pleasing.
Well, there you go. We're going to be aesthetically pleasing too. I'll get dressed up for this one.
Okay. well, maybe we'll make it a video cast then.
Yeah, we could. Well, maybe we should figure out the audio portion first and work on the video later. It'd be interesting.
yeah, perhaps.
Video casts, I find, have personally for me, have no merit, because just if I'm going to listen to something, I'm interested in the content. But watching the talking head deliver the content, to me, doesn't add any interest. So unless we start to juggle or something, I'm not sure what entertainment value we'll actually be able to distribute.
We started off the show as a video cast, and it didn't last all that long.
Yeah, I actually watched. Actually, I do remember that, and I did watch on occasion.
So, well, I guess we're going to put everybody out of their misery for this week, and let everybody settle into whatever plans I've got going on for either a late Canada Day or an early 4th of July. And I guess I should probably just like start the outro music and let you start leading us out.
Excellent. All right. Well, we'd like to thank all of our listeners, all of our monthly and yearly subscribers, of course, all you new guys out there. Thanks for listening live, Quasi Live. Check out our website. It has all kinds of interesting info, http:// lhspodcast.info. You could reach us at info@lhspodcast.info. I'll send an email to both of us, and you could leave us a voicemail. Please do. We love voicemail. We don't get a lot. I'd like to see more. 1-909-LHS-SHOW. 1-909-547-7469. Please subscribe to the mailing list. You can get a link on the website, of course. Go to Cafe Press and Printfection. Buy some of our show merchandise. Each purchase helps out the show a little bit. You guys can contribute that way. You can contribute by telling people about the show, of course, and you can listen live every other Tuesday, 8 p.m. Central. Recording schedules on the website. So with that, my name is Pete, Victor Echo 2 X-Ray Papa Lima. I am in the country of Poutine and Pea Soup in Montreal, Quebec. And I'd like to say 7-3 to everyone, and we'll catch you again in a couple of weeks. Take it away, Russ.
All right, this is Russ, K5TUX, the other guy who does a recording thing every couple of weeks with Pete, that guy up in Canada. He's already given you all the information, but if you want to email me directly, you can do it at K5TUX@LHSpodcast.info. All the other information has been proudly distributed by VE2XPL. You know, I'm out there on the social media networks, Identica, which is now status.net or pump.io or whatever it is, Twitter, Google Plus, blah, blah, blah. Just look for JR Woodman or K5TUX. You'll find me out there somewhere. And, we want to thank everybody for participating in our contest, and congratulations once again to Jonathan Nato for winning the BeagleBone Black. And hopefully we'll, catch you all again in a couple of weeks for episode number 111. We'll talk to you all then.
I'm trying to get on out of here because them hell sheep have got out again. I got to go round them up.